There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
We're a bit obsessed with Saudi tourism here on the program. So a new report that has just come out from the travel business Altea, that is with two Y's, caught our attention because Saudi is one of the places that it's at. We are very pleased to have in the studio this morning to tell us all where we're going and why, Mohammed Shabib, who is the head of Altea's strategic online business unit. Thanks very much for joining us, Mohammed.
Good morning.
Thanks for having me.
Let's kick off having a look at this report that you have just launched, looking at the big trends in travel. Saudi, I know Malcolm in particular, is a bit obsessed with what's happening with travel into Saudi. What are you seeing?
In general, we see a very strong move in the travel sector here in the Middle East. There's a very, very strong focus inside of Saudi of fostering Saudi as a destination, both for domestic tourism as well as inbound tourism. We are in the middle of the market. We're actually a Saudi bred company, and we see there is an increased interest in domestic flights, for example, and domestic hotel stays. What we call staycation here, there is has much more options, many more options actually.
What is sort of fueling that boom? You say many more options, but a lot of the things that we're thinking about that will get people wanting to visit different cities in Saudi are still very much on the drawing board. They're just being announced at the moment.
Yes, however, there is a lot of heritage sites in Saudi Arabia that have been around for decades, and now the media is focusing on it. The Saudi government, the Saudi Tourism Board is talking about it actively. Media is full of the beauty of Saudi Arabia. There's a very big media campaign fostering actually national tourism.
There isn't very much in the way of domestic tourism, non-religious domestic tourism, to be honest with you. I've been down to the Asir National Park. There aren't very many hotels there. It's not very well developed, but it's an absolute global gem, to be honest. But most of the tourism in to Saudi Arabia and domestic is religious-based tourism, which I was rather surprised to see that part of your report talks about spontaneous takes off. 40% of flights are booked within 2 days of departure, which I was surprised at because given the need for exit visas for many residents. I mean, how does that work? If people haven't got the flexibility to travel, how can there be so many last-minute takeoffs?
I think the Saudi nationals have the flexibility to take off. What you're talking about is domestic workers, for example.
I know.
Or workers in general in Saudi Arabia.
Which, of course, are the majority of the population. Yeah.
We have 30 million Saudis.
Yeah, yeah.
Just Saudi nationals is 20-something million. And they love to travel. And we see that. Like the nationality split that we have in our bookings, for example, in the hotel bookings as well as in the flight bookings, is dominated by Saudi nationals.
Do you think they're going to continue to travel over the next 5 or 10 years as more and more domestic attractions open up? We've got cinemas, we've got women driving, you've got sort of the West Coast talked about as potential. And other things might relax in Saudi as well. Do you think that Saudis will travel as much?
I do believe that the travel patterns will change. However, the amount of travel will be pretty constant. What I'm saying is the weekend travel to Bahrain, the weekend travel to Dubai, the weekend travel to Beirut will probably be replaced increasingly with weekend travel to, for example, North Saudi Arabia coming from Riyadh or coming from Jeddah. Whereas the international travel per year, where people take off to Europe in summer break, this will stay.
What are you hearing, though, as such a major travel player from Saudi authorities in terms of a wink and a nod for visas for people coming into Saudi?
There is a very, very big push inside the government to relax a lot of the regulation. So we see a clear trend towards making Saudi a destination for people beyond the typical Umrah and Hajj visitors. People should stay in Saudi Arabia rather than doing stopovers in other countries when they come in.
I mean, are they saying to you, look, get ready, we are going to relax the visa laws, you can expect more, even just Arab tourists?
We're in constant discussions with the authorities in the kingdom, and there is a clear tendency towards relaxation of these things.
I guess so. The relaxation we've heard at the moment says that the tourist visas will be given to groups. But, of course, the vast majority of people want to go by themselves, they don't want to go in a group, and, you know, you want to wander around and poke around and do this, that and the other at your own whim. When's that going to happen?
I think we're not looking at 10 years from now. We're looking at 1-2 years from now. There's a clear push towards that. And what we also need to understand is we're trying to correct the path of the last decades into a much more open culture, a much more open society. This doesn't happen overnight.
Realistically, what kind of appetite do you see for that?
I think it's huge. I do believe it's huge. It's driven by the Crown Prince And what we have seen so far is if there is a determination there, it will happen.
I mean, obviously, we hear Richard Branson getting involved in West Coast tourism. We hear about this massive great city, NEOM, that's going to be built up in the northwest of the country. We know they've got high-speed railways, metro projects, all sorts of other projects. King Abdullah Economic City still not finished. I mean, a lot of money going to be needed. How fast do you think all of these projects will actually happen, given the need to raise finance first?
I do believe that people have observed the rise of Dubai in the past two decades and have learned from that. Learning from that means that they will sort of take the good things that happened and take the a little slower things and try to avoid them.
I guess one of the things about Dubai is that it's very focused. It's, you know, Dubai leadership, one city, one coastline. In Saudi Arabia, you'd have to replicate that three times if you're going to keep sort of Dammam, Khobar, community happy, Riyadh, Jeddah, and some of the sort of other growing cities, Tabuk, etc.
Yeah, you're right. The complexity there is factor X from what you see here, but also the available cash funding is factor X of what you see here, and that's being deployed at the moment.
But do you think there might be sort of zonal development? For instance, you know, Jeddah, which has traditionally been more relaxed because it's closer to Egypt, etc., etc. It's got the Red Sea, a lot of people coming in to do tourism down there. Do you think that that might be the sort of the more relaxed side of the country where the, some of the new innovations will come in first?
I do believe that there is the regional split in Saudi Arabia will give this natural development. So you will see a lot of focus on the west coast of Saudi Arabia first. I'm pretty sure west and north. And then the rest of the heritage sites and the rest of the tourism destinations they want to build will follow.
Well, I'm quite interested in you as a company as well, because one thing that really came to light for me when I was looking through your report was how much Al Tayar itself had changed. I mean, you're from the Strategic Online Business Unit. You head it up, which was started 2 years ago. And I can, well, I'm guessing that as a travel agent, you've looked at what's happening in people's travel booking patterns and have thought, right, this is where we need to be. Why did you start up a strategic online business unit? What writing did you see on the wall?
I think it is a necessary push for the Al Tayar Group. Al Tayar Group is the largest travel agency in the Middle East and has been offline in the last three decades. So when I had my first discussions with the leadership of the group, young leadership of the group, we talked about the future and how we can actually help this group to transform and survive in the future in a fierce competition environment. And it's a natural move to build the online part of the business.
How do you do that, though? I mean, as a travel business, watching people book more and more, watching the websites from people like Emirates get easier and easier to use, what kind of conversations do you have about relevance?
I do believe there's different types of customers. Some customers prefer booking, for example, on sites such as Emirates.com. Some want to have the neutral perspective on the available options. And this is what we give. We give a user experience that is second to none. We give a comparable pricing. What we do as well is we allow you to book a combination of hotels, flights, holiday packages, all on the same invoice with the same payment method, etc.
I am the cynic who sort of says, why do we still need travel agents? But having a look at your app, which is one of the things that the your online business unit has launched, it allows you to book a departure with one airline and a return with the other to make sure that you get the times of flights that you want. What does that do to the price?
There is you can do that on international flights, and usually then they're counted at 2 one-way tickets, and one-way tickets usually are higher than the return tickets. However, sometimes people are much more in favor of time management than price management. I'm one of those. When I do business travel, I have to make sure I land at 8 a.m. I have to make sure that I have a flight after my last meeting at 8 p.m. So this is, in my case, important. The other thing is for domestic travelers. So people traveling inside the country want to be able to combine low-cost carriers with full-service carriers, for example. In that case, usually prices don't differ too much, and you get the advantage of comparing different carriers at different timings.
So how do you convince people to use your app rather than another that they might know more, or rather than going direct to source?
Look, I think it's all about what brand you build and what values you stand for and what user experience you provide users. And we try to do a combination of the three, which, I mean, within 2 years, we generated more than $500 million in net sales. So we probably do more right things than wrong things. That's what I keep saying.
What are you seeing in terms of the age of your users, though? I mean, I don't use a travel agent. My dad, though, whenever he books a holiday, will go down to the Harbour or High Street, and he will go and see his local travel agent.
I know you want to hear the word millennial. I'm not going to say that. But no, our user base is anything between 18 to 45, I think, is the majority of our user base. We also see people beyond that age that travel frequently and have the money to spend, actually, to book 5-6 travels with us a year.
I was interested to see that when you break down who geographically is using their PCs to book, who's using their mobile phone, who's using, you know, the website on their mobile phone, who's going straight to the app, Saudi customers are a lot more mobile than we are here in the UAE. They are app first, almost double the rate that we are in the UAE. Why is that?
I think it's because of the short notice booking behavior. Just imagine someone travels with a car, for example, from Dammam to Bahrain, arrives there and then starts looking for a hotel. That's a typical booking behavior where people are on the street, take out the app, not the desktop, and then start finding a location to stay at.
So booking a hotel once you're already in the city in which you need
a
hotel.
For example, that's one of the typical things that you see there.
We're speaking to Altair, the travel people, two Y's in that. They've launched a new talent accelerator program. Their online business unit is tying up with some of the biggest names in tech and travel to train Arab talent. We're speaking now to Mohammed Shabib, who is the head of Altair's strategic online business unit. Mohammed, thanks very much for staying with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Do you want to tell us what you're doing?
Yes. For me, it's a dream come true. So being an Arab but born in the West, I always thought I was privileged. Coming here a couple of years ago, starting up online business, I figured it's very, very difficult to get Arabic talents that actually can add value in a digital startup from day one. What we see is there's a lot of investment going into infrastructure, into universities. But when people get out of their graduation, they're not ready to work yet with a company like us. So what we thought is, let's give them on the job training. The thought behind it is we want to create a model that other private sector companies can adopt. And what we're doing this year is we're hiring 30 people on a 6-month program with a very, very rigorous selection process. In the 6-month program, they get on the job training, mentoring, coaching, and concrete projects to work on. At the end of the 6 months, they will get a certificate that they have undergone this program and are free to do whatever they want. Either we hire them, one of the partners hires them, or they go into the free market. The partners that we could convince, and they were really head over heels when we discussed it, was our Google, Facebook, Udacity, Twitter, Amadeus, the big travel giant.
Okay, there's so much to unpack in there. Let's just start, though, with the role of the private sector, because it's really interesting that you're doing that. I've heard about that skills gap from so many would-be employers. As you're saying, people are coming out of college or whatever, and they're not trained in the things that employers necessarily want them to be trained in. A lot of people see that as the education system's fault to pick up. There's a lot of sort of interim year study that's happening. A lot of people see it as the government's job, and we have a lot of accelerators, etc., and skills initiatives, coding initiatives, particularly here in the UAE. Why do you think it's the private sector's job?
Because I do believe there's a lot beyond knowledge. First of all, the universities are too slow to catch up with technology. By the time they have developed a curriculum, you have new technology and it's outdated already. I think the government's role is to set an infrastructure, a framework, but not to really lead on this themselves. So when I look at ourselves, what we look for is people that have technical skills. That's something you can learn. People who also have the right, what I would summarize under the word will. Will is a set of values, is ambition, and is really eagerness to work hard and to learn from others. This is something you should get from your family life. And it doesn't happen very often here. And this is something that we can give on day-to-day mentoring, and role modeling actually plays a very important role.
So how are you working with these big names? We've got Amadeus there, the massive travel technology firm, Google, Facebook, Twitter. What happened? How did you bring them in?
I had personal conversations with their leaderships here in the region, and we all share one thing. We want to give back to the region. We are very passionate about this region. This is why we're here. Most of us left Europe, for example, to come here for a reason. We want to develop this region. What we're doing in collaboration with them is there's trainings that we set up in collaboration. There is networking events that they set up. We even are discussing at the moment to fly a group of these 30 students to a development center, for example, in South France, where Amadeus sits, to see how real work is done on the ground. This is a lot of things that should excite the young students to really follow and pursue a career that is meaningful.
And yet you don't expect them after those 6 months to stay with you. You say they're free to go off and do whatever they want with those skills.
We don't ask for any commitment at all. Let's put it that way. I'm pretty sure that we're one of very, very few companies that would interest these students.
What stage are you in this process at the moment?
We just launched the program last week during a press conference here in Dubai. We're now starting the selection process. So we're awaiting applications by students and by people with less than 2-3 years experience in jobs. And then the selection process will run, and in September the program then will start with the first batch.
So what's the criteria? Someone said that actually. Yeah, that sounds like me.
Okay. We want people who are very ambitious, who can tell a story of who they are. People obviously who are high performers in any environment they have been so far. And people then who come to an assessment center where we really see if they can lead also in group environments.
Let me ask you lastly about Saudi Airlines. We know that because they've never really been put to the test with sort of having to satisfy huge international traffic, it's been mostly sort of economy class, sort of Islamic tourism. You know, you've got Saudia, Flynas, Flyadeal, the last two low-cost carriers, Nesma, Al Maha flying in there as well, Mideast Jet, Al Anwar Charter, Dala Avco. There's a lot of companies there. Saudia, of course, is the front runner. This whole revolution of tourism is going to revolutionise the airlines as well. Do you think they'll open up a lot more to foreign airlines, perhaps allowing foreign airlines to start airlines in Saudi?
Look, I think it still needs time. I think it needs still time for the economy to open up.
Is there a resistance, say, to having sort of Emirates, Saudia, for instance?
I think there's a focus on fostering the own economy in Saudi Arabia, and I think that's right now. Coming from a position of strength probably helps in negotiations and in discussions with foreigners to come on board. You can see that also in history. When you look in history of other countries here around the region, you come always from a strong national carrier. You have smaller carriers coming around, and then you see the international players coming in. By the way, there is no difference in Europe. The other carriers coming into European countries came after the national carriers became very strong.
Thanks very much for speaking to us this morning, Mohammed Shabib, who is the head of Altair's Strategic Online Business Unit.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.